I'm Richard Harris, and welcome to Real Risk, the podcast that talks to people who put themselves in harm's way. You know the type. Big wave surfers, professional soldiers, base jumpers. I'll get inside the heads of men and women who seem fearless or even reckless. They might seem crazy to us, but most are far from it. We'll be talking about putting your life on the line for something important. We're talking about real risk. I can't think of a sport that scares me more than base jumping and wingsuit flying. Any internet search for most dangerous sports will contain base jumping. The Red Bull imagery on YouTube is both breathtaking and horrifying. With almost every jumper toting a GoPro camera these days, multiple camera angles of accidents and fatalities are easy to find. So I expected my conversation with the world's most successful base enthusiast to be a wild ride full of high energy superlatives and passion. What I discovered instead should not have surprised me. Success in the case of Sean Tumor means two things: more jumps than anyone else on this planet, and a profound respect for both the dangers of the sport and the personal growth that comes through risk-taking. Honestly, I've never met a calmer guy. G'day, Sean Tumor, and welcome to Real Risk.
How's it going?
So, Sean, let's start right at the beginning. For a man like myself who knows nothing about base jumping, how did this sport start?
How did the sport of base jumping start?
Yeah.
I'm not sure who the first guy was, but I know that people have been doing it for a long time. And I know the first guys that did it were pretty crazy. Like, people look at us and think that we're crazy, like in nowadays times. But the guys that did it in the past were super crazy because they had no clue what was actually going to happen. You know, they used super primitive parachutes, like round parachutes, and it was like they didn't know if they were actually going to live or not. Now, you know, it's been proven and tested, and everybody actually like has, you know, they know that it works if you do it right. But yeah, I'm not sure how long ago it started, but I think it was pretty long time ago. And yeah, guys just jumped parachutes that they jumped out of planes off of cliffs. I know people were jumping off of El Capitan in Yosemite a long time back when they were actually allowed to. And they were jumping round parachutes. And, you know, with those things, they don't get much forward glide like ours do now. So they're not able to get away from the cliff. So, you know, oftentimes the scare would be that they were going to open and then drift back into the cliff and get hung up on it, which is a pretty scary thing. I mean, imagine being like 1,000 feet up, just dangling by your parachute on a rock, you know. It would take a long time to get off of there.
That is one of many things that I can imagine would frighten me about this sport, Sean. So how many people are involved in the sport worldwide, would you
say? People ask me that a lot, and I really don't know, but I would guess 5,000. Hopefully that's close, but I know that there's a thing called the World, or the United States Base Association. Now I forget that I'm talking to you, but they issue base numbers mostly for Americans. But getting a base number is when you've jumped all four objects. So there's a BASE, it stands for building, antenna, span, and earth. And when someone has jumped all those objects, they write to this association, and it's just like this cool thing that these guys do. They issue you a base number. And I think there's about 24. It's probably up to about 2,800 now. That's people that actually have that. So I'm guessing there's probably, you know, about double that amount because a lot of people don't get that. So I'm guessing maybe 5,000 or 6,000 people worldwide that actually base jump.
So if I came to you and said, Sean, I've decided to reinvent myself, I want to take up base jumping, how would I start?
I would say, are you sure? And then you would say, yes, I definitely want to do that. And if you did, I would tell you, if you wanted to learn how to base jump, I would tell you that you need to go learn how to skydive first and that you want to get really good at skydiving. I always make my students have at least 200 skydives because way up in the air, that's the best place to learn how to fly a parachute rather than, you know, just in the few seconds that you have on a base jump. You know, base jumping, we have small landing areas. Yeah, basically you just get going skydiving, get real good at it, and then eventually you take a class like one that I teach. There's a few other people that teach them too here at the Perrine Bridge in Idaho. It's one of the best places to learn, but yeah, that's kind of what you do. You got to learn how to pack parachutes. Everybody hates learning that. because it's a pain in the ass, but it's pretty exhausting when you're learning because the students have to, you know, they got to pack, then they have to do the jump part, which is emotionally draining. And then they got to hike out of the canyon as well. So you can, they're so tired by the end of the day and just spent. It's pretty funny because it is, it's a lot. It's a lot to deal with.
I forgot about the bit where you got to walk back up the hill again.
We do a lot of hiking.
Yeah, well, no wonder you're a fit looking fella.
Thanks.
So it's 500 feet. That's the height from the bridge to the water at your bridge.
Yeah, and I always joke around and tell people, you know, right now the water's high, so they have to kind of be a little more careful. But in reality, it's only like a couple feet higher. It's just kind of a joke. But yeah, it's 486 allegedly. I've never measured it, but that's the number they say.
And what's the minimum height that you can safely jump from?
Well, safely, I mean, it's all relative to a person's skill level. I think some of the lowest ones are around 70 something feet. That's doing something called a direct bag. It's just a really quick way of deployment. So that it's as low as that, but that's, I wouldn't call that safe because, you know, that's pretty close to just splattering into the ground. But I would say once you get up around 300 feet, it starts to get a little bit safer. So that's pretty common height to jump off of, and you can jump in free fall. And I guess I'll explain, you know, free falling is, it's when you actually deploy your own parachute. So like you would jump and you have the little, there's a little pilot chute that you hold in your hand on low jumps like that. And you throw it right after you jump. And basically that pulls out the parachute. It pops some pins in the container, which is the backpack part. And then it pulls out the parachute. And once the parachute gets all the way stretched out, we call that line stretch. Once it gets to that, then it starts to inflate with air. So there's a lot of stuff that has to happen in a short amount of time. I'd say 300 feet is kind of like the good one. But yeah, there's that free fall is when you throw your own pilot chute. And there's other quicker ways where it's called the static line. A lot of people have heard of that, like military static line jumps where we actually tie something. Like basically you're tying a part of your whole parachute system to the object you're jumping off of. And then basically this string that you use to tie breaks once it all gets to line stretch. So it just pulls it out faster. And with that, you can jump. I'd say a safe jump is still probably about 170 feet then.
And is it safer jumping off a bridge that you obviously can't fly backwards into?
Yeah, it's way safer. Actually, when you're jumping off, well, not all bridges are like that. But, you know, if one has pillars or just stuff to hit, it is more dangerous. The one we jump off here in Idaho is it's just an arch bridge. So there's nothing underneath the hit. So that's one of the, you know, scary things that can happen is your parachute can open facing the wrong way. And if there's a cliff back there, then, you know, you only have about 2 or 3 seconds max to turn it around before you smash into the cliff under your parachute. And a lot of times when people do that, it breaks bones. And you can also get hung up because the parachute is, you know, just grabs onto rocks and then you're hanging there with broken bones until, you know, you get rescued. Yeah, it can be pretty scary if it's a cliff, but that's some of the risk we take, you know. It's still really, really fun.
Yeah. What's the main motivation for you in this sport?
For me, it's so many different things. I mean, I love the feeling of weightlessness. I love the feeling when I'm in that. And the free fall part is my favorite. And in free fall, I love to do flips. That's one of my favorite things to do. And I'm just real fascinated by the fact that when I'm doing flips, and this is kind of hard to explain, but I can be back flipping. And then in the midst of one of those flips, I can just decide to do a twist in that flip, which I always thought was kind of pretty interesting. It almost seems like it defies the laws of physics because it's almost like you're just thinking about putting a twist in there and all of a sudden you can start, you know, rotating on this opposite axis. And I just kind of nerd out about that kind of thing. So I don't know. That's one of the most exciting things, but I do just love, I love the nature part of it. Just some of the places I get to see, beautiful places that you just never go to. And I just love being up in the air and just that feeling of being detached from the ground, a feeling that you don't get, you know, living your normal life. Flying is just really cool.
Did you have gymnastic training or any kind of athleticism as a younger guy?
Yeah, I was a gymnast for about 10 years. I think I started when I was 10. You know, so I had this little trampoline, right? It was like a jogging trampoline. You've seen those probably. So I got one of those and I started trying to learn how to do flips in my yard. And then I got pretty good at it. I just kind of taught myself how to do front flips off of it. And then I begged my parents to let me into either gymnastics or diving. And at first it was diving. I got into that, but it was hard for my mom to get me to diving practice. So I ended up like getting to go to gymnastics, which was more expensive. And I'm sure my parents hated that, but they're pretty stoked about it now because it ended up leading to better things. But yeah, I did gymnastics for about 10 years, beating my body up, doing all kinds of crazy stuff with my joints.
Yeah, I can imagine how that set you up well for the sport you're involved in now. What about your family? Were they adventurous people?
Not like I am. We went boating and stuff like that and went on some cool trips, but there was no skydiving in my family. I guess my grandpa, actually, on my mom's side, he was in the 82nd Airborne when he was younger. So that's about the only skydiving type thing that was in my family. But they knew, you know, when I was a kid, I think they saw it coming, but they probably didn't realize that it would last my whole life, desire to go do flying thing. But they're pretty stoked about it now because, I mean, my dad is probably my biggest fan. He loves it so much. He actually moved here to Twin Falls because he saw how much fun I was having, and he loves taking pictures and stuff. So he's like totally involved himself in the base jumping world as well, which is pretty funny. He loves it. And he's actually done a couple base jumps himself. I've taken him on tandem jumps in Malaysia and here at the bridge. And he's always hanging out with my friends down there. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
He sounds like a cool dad. How old's he?
60. I'm terrible at remembering. I feel bad because I'm terrible at remembering people's ages. Mid-60s.
Right. Oh, well, I hope he's got a strong heart still.
Yes, I think it's pretty good.
So you've turned this into a full-time job by the sounds of things, Sean. Are there many people in the world who are professional base jumpers?
There's a few, yeah. I mean, it's mostly the guys with the most experience. There's, you know, a lot of guys that have been around a while. It's really hard, though. I would say it's probably as hard as being a professional football player. There's not a huge population of jumpers. So finding your, like, figuring out what to do in the sport to actually make money doing it is pretty tough. For me, teaching, I love teaching people. It's pretty nerve-wracking, though. I mean, you should see how scared some people are, and, you know, you're kind of wondering how they're going to perform on their first jumps, and you kind of have to read people a lot. So I feel like, you know, I went to school for psychology, and after I graduated college, I never saw myself actually going into a psychology job. But now that I look at it, I don't use the book work and stuff, but it set my mind up in a certain way where I actually, I don't know, I feel like I use a lot of psychology when I'm teaching people. But I guess your question, you know, saying how many people as a profession, I would say there's probably like, I don't know, 10 people that have legitimate schools. There's gear manufacturers. There's people that hold events. But yeah, it's pretty difficult.
So your income is based on your teaching rather than competitions?
Yeah, teaching and tandem base. There's not a lot of room for competition in base jumping because then people just push themselves harder and then bad things start to happen. So it's more like, I guess, events or exhibitions is kind of more what base jumping does rather than compete against each other. I'm not much of a competitive guy anyway, so I don't know if I would enjoy that. But
no, competition in a sport like this doesn't sound wise.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, imagine if you had a bunch of guys, and we've done this once, it was kind of scary, but put a bunch of guys next to each other and say, let's see who can do the best flips or the most flips. They're going to try really hard to do as many as they can. They're going to go out of their way to do something that they haven't done before. And, you know, that can get really scary because I think the whole point of doing this sport is just to do it for fun. I think it's really important to just keep your motivation going in that direction rather than try to beat someone at something.
So it's awesome that you told me that you studied psychology, because one of the things I'm really interested in is the psychology of risk-taking activities and also comparing different activities, what kind of people they attract. And for me, something like base jumping has always been at that end of the spectrum where I picture people who are the definition of adrenaline junkies. You know, it's a brief moment of intense stimulation, if you like, while you throw yourself off the top of a structure. You have a brief period of free fall, and then you've got to do a precise set of very careful maneuvers to make yourself safe and then land on a small target, as you've mentioned, compared to something like what I do with cave diving, which I always consider to be a very cerebral kind of sport. There's no room for adrenaline. There's no room for emotion. You have to be very calm at all times and constantly thinking and problem solving. Do you think that's unfair, my kind of assessment of us being at opposite ends of a spectrum of risk-taking adventurers?
No, I think that's pretty valid. I mean, you know, when I think about my sport, I know that it's really important not to make stupid decisions. You know, people are faced with, in base jumping anyways, and I guess life in general, people are faced with all kinds of different decisions, and any one bad decision in any moment can lead to, you know, something catastrophic. I know from my experience that you have to be very aware in every moment and not to be too eager to do something difficult or more dangerous. You know, you have to kind of keep the desires in check and just really be, I guess, cognizant of trying to prolong, not really prolong your life, but to just make the right decision so that you can continue jumping for fun. It's weird how some people will really push themselves, because if you do make a mistake, you know, in the sport, it can be, like I said before, it can be really bad. So yeah, it's kind of like, I see this sport as a psychological, it's like your own psychological experiment. You have to try to figure out who you are and, you know, all kinds of different things about yourself. And it just becomes, you really get to know yourself and watch this thing play out, you know. And there'll be times where you see yourself from the outside going in a certain direction, and then all of a sudden you realize something else about the patterns that you're following, and you're able to catch yourself and stop yourself from going down like a dark or dangerous path. And you learn something about yourself every time you do that.
Yeah, on my last podcast, I was chatting with a very well-known caver and cave diver, a guy called Bill Stone from Texas. And we talked about the fact that the guys who survive longest in the sport are often the people who, after spending vast amounts of time, energy, effort, and money even, to get themselves to the water's edge, they're ready for this big exploration cave dive, and they find one minor fault with their equipment and they say, you know what, today's not the day, and they've got the strength of character to walk away despite the fact there might be 80 people who have helped get them to the water and carry their equipment and so forth. That takes a lot of personal courage to say, no, at this moment in time, this is not a safe thing for me to do. Do you see an analogy in base jumpers with that kind of situation? People who are survivors and proficient in the sport have got that strength of character?
Yeah, that's so similar to our sport, because they a lot, right? Let's say someone got a job to do a television show or a commercial or something like that. And if the wind wasn't right or something like that, you know, you've still got all this pressure, this company that spent, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to get this certain shot. And to be able to say, hey, you know, something doesn't feel right or the wind's not right, that's so much pressure. To be able to, you know, step down and say, yeah, things aren't right now is a huge thing. It's so important. I know that I've been on several jumps where I just sometimes feel that just something isn't right, you know. And I know that there's a difference between fear and just a gut reaction or like a gut feeling. They're really hard to decipher between the two. But I know if something doesn't feel right, I don't do it. If my stress level is kind of high, then that makes the level of fun go down. So my jump isn't going to be as fun. I don't want to be stressed out when I'm jumping. That's not why I do it. So yeah, I think it's very strong thing. And I really admire jumpers that are just, you know, just be sitting down for the day or not jump, rather than, you know, chasing something else, because you have to listen to yourself. I mean, that's what keeps you alive. Even though you may have done it for no reason, how would you know unless you actually went forward and something did happen? Like for yourself, let's say you said, yeah, something, you know, something's not right about this. I'm not going to go dive this cave. You're going to walk away from that wondering if something bad would have happened versus actually having just gone for it anyways and something happened. So
what's the overlap with wingsuit flying and base jumping?
Well, there's different sports within base jumping. So, you know, this isn't like a normal, or it's not a, I guess, real term, but I'll just call it normal base jumping is jumping off of buildings, antennas, spans, and cliffs with parachute, with no suit. So that's like usually jumping off of low stuff or whatever, but that's what I would call normal base jumping. Wingsuit base jumping, yeah, it's still base jumping. It's much different though, because now you're jumping off. It has to be a pretty big cliff because you have to fall a little bit. Then you start flying. You know, it usually takes, I don't know, just 3 or 4 seconds till you start moving forward. Yeah. And then from there, you're flying the whole way down, like flying down mountains. You know, sometimes you're just flying away from a cliff, but when you really get into it, you're flying really close to stuff. So two different sports, but both really awesome. Some people just do one or the other. I like to do both. They're both great. I'd say most of the fatalities in base jumping happen with wingsuiting. And I think a lot of that's because, you know, you're really hauling ass with those wingsuits and flying next to rocks sometimes. And, you know, there's a lot more wind, like judging of the conditions and stuff like that.
Yeah, that so-called proximity flying where people seem to want to fly as close to the terrain as possible and then even fly through little holes in the cliffs and so forth. That's next level.
Yeah, it's really fun. There's no doubt about that. I love doing stuff like that.
I mean, I assume from watching those videos that you have more control than what it appears in the video. I mean, you know, those wide-angle GoPro cameras and so forth obviously make everything hard to judge from the person's perspective of watching a video, but assuming the pilot themselves or yourself has a sense that things are pretty much under control.
Yeah, it takes a lot of practice to learn how to fly a wingsuit, because when you first put it on, it's like a straight jacket and you're trying to guide yourself. It just feels really awkward and you have to pull a parachute, and a lot of times you get all twisted up once the parachute opens because you're just out of control. But eventually you start to get much smoother and more controlled at it, where you become very precise the more you do it. It's really hard in the beginning, but you can get very good at it. It definitely takes a lot of work, though. So anybody that thinks that they could just get in one and start flying, that's not how it works. You really have to kind of get in tune with it.
And do you start that from an airplane, like a skydiver?
Yeah, the normal training, the progression is, you know, after you get about 200 skydives without a suit or anything, then people are, I guess, allowed to put on a wingsuit. And then, you know, it takes, I'd say, at least a couple hundred wingsuit skydives before you could actually do one in a base jump environment. But of course, you would have to have done a bunch of normal base jumps as well. It's kind of like the progression starts all over.
Yeah, so that sounds like a few years of training as a minimum.
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, some people do it pretty fast. Sometimes it takes years and years. The smart people are scared of it and don't even get into it.
So I've read that you've done over 5,000 base jumps now, one source said that may well be the greatest number of anyone in the world. Is that accurate?
As far as I know, it's actually, I have 6,700. And as far as I know, that's the most. There's a few people in the world that have over 4,000. I know my friend Miles Dasher has around almost 6,000 or so. I think it's just me and him right now that are up almost, you know, around 6,000, above 6,000.
So, I mean, that leads to the very obvious question is, what's the secret of your longevity, Sean?
Well, I think I'm damn good at making good decisions. I think that's what it really comes down to. And I'm not in it to show off. I'm not in it for attention seeking. I think a lot of people do follow that. They want to get the next shot for social media and everything. And I'm not so much into that. I do it because I'm passionate about it. And it's just, I do it for me. And I used to, in the beginning, really try to, I mean, I didn't try to, but I remember people would say, do a trick, because I was doing, you know, flips and tricks kind of like early in my career. And I would. And I had a few close calls where I, you know, they're really close. It's scary. And I just ended up, through those close calls, I ended up figuring out that I didn't want to do it to impress people or entertain people. I mean, I like that. I like when people watch and they're entertained, but I know I'm doing it for myself. And I think about all the variables before I try any difficult tricks. And I just always make sure that, you know, that I'm not being pressured by cameras or people or anything like that. I think that's what keeps me around, is just being wise about it and taking my time and not needing to show off or get the shot or anything like that.
You're listening to Real Risk, the adventure podcast with Richard Harris. When you're with new students, do you talk a bit about accident analysis and look at other people's mistakes to try and steer them down the right path?
Yeah, I mean, I really talk to them about that a lot. I let them know that, you know, it's very important to make wise decisions. That's hard. I mean, it's easier said than done, because your, you know, emotions get in the way and your desires. I mean, people want to progress really quickly in the sport, so they think that the way to do that is to just try all the hard stuff that they see on videos. But the important part is actually, you know, creating a really good foundation and just getting experience, you know, doing it over and over again and getting really good at, you know, controlling yourself and just being, you know, completely on point and precise, because it's like a precision sport. And that's the thing that, that keeps you around and makes you a good base jumper, is if you're just a complete ninja at it.
I saw a video where you're sitting on the grass meditating, or possibly mock meditating. I wasn't sure whether it was a bit of a joke. Is that you? Are you a transcendental sort of guy who takes time out to, you know, make sure your mind's in the right place, or is that not really what you're about?
Yeah, we were having fun in that video, but I am into meditation. I have been for, it's been almost 20 years now. I started when I was in college. And the reason why I started is because I took a class called Transpersonal Psychology, and it was the most exciting, interesting psychology class I'd ever taken. But I guess it was something that the rest of the psychology department didn't really like, because it wasn't normal. It just wasn't the general type of psychology class. It was more about spiritual growth and mysticism and all kinds of different Eastern traditions and different religions. I am really into that. I know that my whole purpose in my life is to actually grow spiritually, and I do that within base jumping. But yeah, it's the most important thing to me in my life. So I spend a lot of time trying to better myself, because I understand and I just realize that that's the main thing, the whole point, rather than to be rich. Of course, that would be nice, but a man isn't really rich unless he's found out his purpose of being here, or at least try to better himself and be good to other people. And so, yeah, it's a huge part of my life.
You're not really painting the picture of the adrenaline junkie who screams banshee before they
I know it,
before they jump off the bridge. You're a very zen kind of laid back, calm sort of fellow, which was not what I was expecting to find in a base jumper, which is fascinating to me, because the more extreme athletes or adventure sports enthusiasts I talk to, the more I'm finding that they're all a bit the same. You know, they're not rash in any way. They're not foolish or reckless. They're very considered and very calm and methodical about what they're doing. And I guess that's why I'm talking to the survivors, not the non-survivors, I suppose. But do you think that's a big part of your success? The fact that you are who you are, rather than someone who of a more reckless sort of personality type?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I always tell people that I must be doing something right, because I've, you know, got 6,700 base jumps and I'm still here. So I just, I think if I was there's an image of a base jumper that the public has, and they think of like Mountain Dew and I guess Red Bull, and just, you know, that you have to be what they call an adrenaline junkie. And I think most of us are so far from that, because I get a lot of peace out of base jumping. I'm not trying to, like I said, stress myself. Having, like, scaring yourself all the time actually isn't that good for you. So I try to be as calm as I can within my jumps, because then I have more fun. I notice I'm more aware of everything. If I'm scared, I just don't even remember much about it. So I'm always trying to, I guess, see further into it and feel more about my base jump and just be more aware of every moment.
As a group of people, is there a bit of a party or drug culture amongst, you know, the base jumping fraternity? And I'm certainly not suggesting that applies to you, Sean, but is it a pretty hard living set of people? Are they?
Yeah, they love to party. that's for sure. They have some great ones too. There's a big sense of family within our family, is what I call it. And yeah, there's a lot, people like to party. I would say it's not always reckless type partying, if that makes sense. I think it's more just to celebrate every day, because base jumpers, I would say more than most people, understand that could end at any moment, whether it's by base jumping or whatever, you know, because we do live kind of skirt that edge of life and death. People realize that they do have to, you know, be good people and just live, you know, as if it's their last day.
Well, I do have a strong feeling that in our modern lives, you know, we are essentially so safe. Well, we are very fortunate living in countries like the US and Australia. Obviously, this doesn't apply to everywhere in the world, but, you know, we're not living in a war zone. Apart from the COVID issue at the moment, we're not living amongst an absolutely lethal pandemic. We have water, we have electricity, we have a roof over our heads. We drive our cars, we don't have to walk miles to work every day. And our lifespan is very long. So I wonder if it's actually important for the human condition to still be exposed to some risk to make us stronger and more resilient. That, for me, is the big benefit of risk-taking activities, that it actually encourages personal growth. Do you have any views on that?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think you get kind of lazy and just bored if you're not living on the edge a little bit. I think people get a bit locked into routines. You know, if you're going to work every day, like most people do, just going to work every day, living the same routine over and over again. And then once you have these little deviations during the day, you kind of freak out, you know, and that's kind of a scary thing. I think it's kind of dangerous to live in the routines that we live in. And I wish we could have more of a free life. I think the main part is that the drive for and the necessity for money. We're doing these crazy things that don't feel natural. It doesn't feel like we're living a natural existence to me. And I think people can get bored and depressed, you know, just by living these routine lives. I know I do. I mean, even what I do, it's like you're kind of locked into a society that sometimes you might not feel like you belong in, just because you're forced to live by certain rules and do certain things in order to pay bills and stuff like that. You know, it's a little bit sad to me sometimes.
I'm interested to know about any incidents or near misses that you've had, Sean, and how that has affected the way you conduct yourself within the sport. Have you come close a few times?
I have. I think the way that I reacted to it was beneficial for me. I know that I wasn't trying to save my ego after I had any close calls. And I guess I'll just explain one time, for instance. I was doing, this was several years ago, I was doing a trick with, you know, some flips and some twists, and my timing was wrong as far as when I threw the pilot chute out to start the deployment sequence. And I ended up wrapping my legs up with this piece called the bridle. It basically connects the parachute to the little pilot chute. It was wrapped around my legs, which made it so the parachute wasn't going to come out. And I'm just falling, and my dad was actually on the bridge taking pictures. And so I actually have photos. I don't know where they are right now, but I'm like basically towing my pilot chute down. I'm upside down looking back up at the bridge. And I think one of the scariest things about that was that my dad was there. But I ended up getting out of it and opened it about probably 50 feet off the ground and still made it to this little landing area. But it was pretty terrifying, and I was really embarrassed. I didn't try to shake it off. And, you know, I know some people say, oh yeah, it was cool, you know, I almost died, but I don't see it like that. I was really embarrassed because I had a certain amount of confidence in my skill level. And from that mistake, I proved to myself that I didn't have, well, it just basically destroyed my confidence. So I felt like I had to start over and build a whole new foundation. You know, that really rocked my world. I think it made me way better though, because I did kind of almost start over. I wasn't able to do very difficult tricks for a long time after that, because I just didn't trust myself, and I couldn't, because I knew that I had made a mistake. I've done that about 4 times, and each time it just destroyed my confidence. I can't say that I'm glad they happened, but it was a good kick in the ass for me, basically, to shift my path within the sport, if I wanted to live, you know. I always tell people, if you do make any mistakes in the sport, you're lucky to be alive, and you will learn a lot from it, unless you just try to save your ego and continue on with the same pattern. But that's insanity. So,
how important is the base jumper themselves compared to equipment failures or weather conditions, things that maybe are sometimes more outside your control? Are most accidents caused by poor judgment?
I would say most are. There are a lot of, not a lot, but there are the freak accidents that happen, you know, just, I call them lightning strikes. Things like that do happen in base jumping, but I would say for the most part, they happen due to poor judgment or, you know, just a bad decision. I mean, I know a lot of jumpers they want to have fun. They want to try difficult stuff. They want to progress in the sport, but sometimes they go a little bit too far. And that's when the mistakes happen. you know, people get wrapped up in each other's canopies and hit the ground. And it's hard because you have to be ultra conservative if you want to last in the sport. You know, it's, you can't be the guy that's just always trying to go. You can't go full speed all the time is basically what it comes down to. You have to pick and choose those and really listen to yourself. And just look at all the different variables. And it, when I jump, if I'm going to do a difficult trick, I make sure that everything feels right as far as like the wind has to feel right. It's, even the temperature affects me. If the temperature is kind of like a nice, you know, warm temperature and there's no wind, and even the vibe around the people on the bridge, just the way that I feel with that. If I feel fatigued, you know, that has a impact on what I do. And I just try to weigh all these things out and then I can decide what I do. When I was younger, I used to think about a trick and I would visualize it for days and days and sometimes years. And then I would decide to do it and I would stress myself out on the way out there to the exit, to whatever I was going to jump off of. And now I've changed a lot because I visualize things that I want to do for long amounts of time. And I think about them, but I don't decide what I'm going to do until I'm out there. At first, I just feel everything. And but a lot of times I just decide right before I jump because then I'm not stressing myself out. And if I get too stressed out, I become fearful, and fear is pretty debilitating if it's too bad. So pretty careful about that.
Do you still feel at all scared before even a very routine jump?
You know, I actually think it's probably more so. And I bet most jumpers would tell you this. I got a few friends, my friend Dukes, he's like the scariest guy I've ever seen on exits. And that's a good thing. He's a lot of us are like that, because we've seen so much. We've seen so much bad stuff happen and lost so many friends that you're very aware of what can go wrong. So that just drives you to be more precise and calculated on everything you do and to just be more conservative even. So I definitely still have fear, although I'm better at managing it than I used to be.
It's kind of hard to understand why you would expose yourself to fear almost on a daily basis. The rewards must be very significant.
I like I said, I like to keep my jump stress free. So I've jumped so much that I feel very in tune with everything that I do. I wouldn't say I'm putting myself at extreme danger. I mean, me jumping is like someone walking across the street, probably. Maybe that's not a good one because that can be pretty dangerous too, but yeah, I don't feel like I'm putting myself in much fear every day. I'm just out there having fun, and I'm just kind of doing my thing. And
what would really scare you? What could I ask you to do that you'd be terrified of, Sean?
Well, it's pretty, I think speaking in front of large groups of people is sometimes pretty tough. I mean, this is different because I'm just talking to you, but I'm always up for that kind of challenge because I like to challenge myself. But yeah, that's probably one of the things that I would say.
What about coming cave diving with me? If you come for a cave dive with me, I'll come and see you and jump off a bridge with you.
Yeah, you know, that sounds pretty interesting. And I think one thing I was wondering about, and I want to ask you this, do you swim through little, like tiny little spots where you barely fit through?
Yeah, whatever it takes to get to a new unexplored tunnel, basically. So sometimes it's small and squeezy, and sometimes it's beautiful big open passage.
I would be a little worried because I think my natural thought would be like, if I swam into this tiny little spot, what if it got so small that you couldn't turn around to get out? Or I mean, you know, just the the feeling of getting trapped would that'd be so scary to me. I mean I would love to try it, but that's one thing that I would just be wondering about, you know.
I was joking about trying base jumping. There's no way I could do that.
Not even a tandem jump?
I'm not that great on heights. The beauty of caving is that you can be on a rope and it can be a 150-meter drop below you, but it's dark so you can't see the bottom. I find that reassuring.
Yeah, you know, one funny thing, you might be surprised by this, but I would say most of my friends that are base jumpers are afraid of heights.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is, huh? But once you put that, you know, backpack on, that magic backpack, it changes things. And, you know, I think it's probably just a natural thing, I think, to be afraid of heights, because you know that if you do fall off of something, you know, if you don't have a parachute, you're going to splatter on the ground. So it's realistic. I think if you weren't afraid, you'd be kind of weird. But you know, some people are just overly afraid where they just kind of lock up and, you know, can't deal with it. So I think it's just a spectrum of.
I think I feel the same way. If I'm clipped to a rope, I can stand right on the edge of a cliff and look down and lower equipment. But as soon as I unclip, I just can't go anywhere near the edge. I hate the feeling. So I guess that's the same as your parachute on your back.
Yeah, it definitely gives me special powers for sure.
Have you had any injuries through the sport?
I have. I definitely destroyed my knee, my left knee. So I was jumping. I was hopping over the rail of the bridge here in Twin Falls. Kind of like you would hop over a fence. I just put both my hands on the rail, hopped over kind of like sideways. And my intent was to just, you know, hop over, start falling and pull my parachute. But I kind of ended up in this standing position and sort of falling back. So it was pretty easy jump, actually. And then I threw the pilot chute and it actually, the pins kind of locked up a little bit. So I was towing the pilot chute down. Parachute's not coming out. I started reaching back to grab on to try to just pull the hands with, pull the pins with my hands. But eventually the parachute came out. Problem was that I was sort of almost on my back. The risers, it's the part that comes off of your shoulders and connects to the parachute. One of those was under my left leg. So when the parachute opened, it just snapped my leg sideways. So it just kind of like broke every ligament in there. And it was completely destroyed. Luckily, I had a surgery, but it was a long recovery and I can use it now. I can still feel it. I mean, this was 9 years ago, I think. But that was my worst injury.
Yeah, so no impact injuries from hitting the ground or going into cliffs?
No, I mean, I've hit cliffs before, but not super hard. I've had several 180s. So, I'm sorry, 180, you know, the parachute opens facing the object, basically. It opens backwards, and you quickly have to turn it around. And luckily, I was able to turn it around, had about 2 seconds. So once I turned it around, the parachute was kind of just descending straight down. So I kind of smacked into the wall with my back, but it started flying away right after that because I actually got the parachute turned away and it was sandstone. It was real smooth. So it was my whole body hitting it rather than just, you know, a knob sticking out, punching into my pelvis or something like that. It was pretty scary, but that's what you train for. You train to be able to react in situations like that. And it's really important to do that too, because, you know, things go right and base jumping is easy, because, you know, you're just going with gravity, but it's only easy until something happens, something, you know, some kind of malfunction or something that is not what you wanted to happen. And you have to deal with it quickly or you're done.
That ability to respond really fast with a clear process to resolve the problem is obviously hugely important in staying alive in the sport. Is that training and muscle memory, or is that the ability to stay calm under that, you know, 2 or 3 seconds of pressure that you've got to solve the problem?
It's both. It's practicing for every situation that you can think of. And it's almost like you have to, before jumps, you have to try to think of every situation that could possibly happen so that you can deal with it. Lots of muscle memory. There's lots of practice that people have to do to train themselves to turn around the canopy real fast. But also, yeah, you have to be able to slow down time basically and get a lot done in a short amount of time. So yeah, I'd say it's just something that comes with experience and deliberate training.
So you mentioned you've lost some friends through the sport. How do you respond when that happens? Does it make you second guess what you're doing? Does it make you want to walk away sometimes?
Well, I have lost a lot of friends, more than I could even name right now. That's the scary thing, you know, and it's very sad. It causes a lot of trauma in our sport as far as, I'd say post-traumatic stress for a lot of people. And it's a pretty mysterious area. You have friends that you're really close to and then all of a sudden they're gone. And then you're left wondering what to think. And a lot of people look for something to blame. A lot of times it's the sport that they blame and they say, I hate base jumping. It killed my friends. And so some people get out of the sport and they disassociate with their friends that are in the sport. But then they realize, you know, when they lose the next friend, they realize that they wish they had spent more time with the friend that they, you know, the friends that they dissociated with. So it's something that you can't really ever get away from. And it's just, you know, it leaves people trying to figure out who to blame. But I know for myself, I understand that the sport is dangerous and that there's a lot of risks involved, but I know that I love it so much. I love it and I don't blame the sport. I know that things can happen. I'm already aware of the risks. I think a lot of people get into it and they just don't quite understand what can possibly happen. So when the bad stuff does happen, they, you know, it's really tough for them. And I hate seeing people go through it. It's still really hard to lose friends. I mean, it's not like that gets easier. It really makes you grow as a person and think about what's beyond life. So I think in the end, it's a good experience. Even though that may sound kind of morbid, but it definitely helps you, you know, really realize more about life and purpose and, you know, what you should be doing.
Do you ever feel guilty or selfish for exposing your family to the worry of what you do?
I don't, because they know that I love it. I understand that if something did happen, it would be devastating, but they know that I love it and they know that I'm very careful. That doesn't make me immune to anything. I know that. I know that would be distracting if I did have those feelings, but this is what I was meant to do here. You know, I mean, one of the things I was meant to do in my existence. It's super amazing. And, you know, I hope I can do it till I'm super old.
Well, I'm sure your partner wouldn't want to live with grumpy Sean, who's not allowed to go base jumping. So almost certainly it makes you who you are and makes you the fun guy to be around.
I'm really grateful that I've been able to meet so many people through this sport and be part of such a huge part of the large family that we have. I hope that the newer base jumpers listen to the more experienced base jumpers, just because, you know, there's people that have been around seeing how this sport goes, and there's a lot to learn from the people that are experienced. But yeah, I'm super grateful for all my friends. It's just a beautiful thing to be part of such a, just a different kind of group, you know? I mean, where we all share something in common and we all get to grow together. And so I really do value my relationships more and more. And I'm especially grateful for that. My girlfriend is so supportive of my sport as well, you know, because she could easily tell me that she hates it and that she wishes I didn't do it, but I wouldn't be the same person without it. It's like a part of me that it makes me, you know, partly of who I am. It's the reason why I am who I am. So it's real nice to have support for doing it. And yeah, as far as base jumping, I think it's headed in a pretty good direction. It's completely exploding right now. As far as, you know, the amount of people that want to do it, I would say if someone wants to learn how to base jump, remember, you don't just watch a YouTube video and say, yeah, I'm going to buy a parachute and go do that. There's so much that goes into it. You have to learn how to skydive, which is really fun. You just go to, you know, your local drop zone or some place that's close, some skydiving center, and you can easily sign up to go, to do this progression program, learn how to skydive, get into it, have lots of fun with it. And then you get really good at it. You know, that's, you gotta be really good. You don't want to shortcut your way into base jumping. Like the canopy flats are much shorter in base jumping. The landing areas are tiny. Lots of things can happen. So you really want to get good, under a parachute. I would say 200 jumps minimum, and then go take a class from a reputable instructor. Doesn't have to be me. I'm not here to sell my course, but, you know, someone that's very experienced, that has been around for a while, that sees how things are and that can, you know, teach you the right way, because any of your friends can go throw you off of an object, but that's not learning. That's just going for it, and you're not going to last very long, and you're going to miss out on all the lessons, and you're going to be reinventing the wheel rather than, you know, learning from the past. And that's how base jumping gets better, is learning from the past and, you know, just making things better and better little by little. And it becomes more controlled and there's less accidents, while the population of jumpers grows. So it's a beautiful sport though, and it's something to be absolutely celebrated. It's man going beyond his limits of, you know, staying on the ground. It's man learning to fly, and it's just man being his own superhero. Which is a beautiful thing. I think a lot of people are really into it, and a lot of people love it, and the public is starting to see that it's a very positive thing rather than, you know, just seeing us as a bunch of troublemakers, because we're not all crazy. We're all just very calculated and very responsible, and it's so much goes into it. There's a lot of bravery involved as well in overcoming one's fears. Yeah, it's I'm excited to see where it goes in the next 10 years or so, and throughout the rest of my life. And I'm just so grateful to be such a part of it.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for talking to me today. Congratulations on the, you know, the enormous number of jumps that you've successfully achieved so far. I look forward to hearing about your 10,000th jump in a what will it be, a couple of years, I guess. You've completely changed my impression and understanding of the both the sport and the type of people that are in it. You're one of the most laid back, relaxed, zen kind of guys I've talked to in a long time. So I think you are an excellent advertisement for the sport in the way you conduct yourself. So congratulations. And I'll put a link in the show notes up to that video, which shows you doing some spectacular jumps off all sorts of interesting structures, and it really is a beautiful thing to watch. So Sean, thanks again for joining me, and hope we catch up again soon.
Yeah, you're so welcome, and thanks so much for talking to me as well. It was great speaking with you.
That's it for this episode of Real Risk. If you're a risk taker or know someone who'd be good for the show, please send me an email on admin@speleopics.com.au. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you think of the podcast. Subscribe, give me a rating, but most importantly, join me for the next one. We'll see you again on Real Risk.